In the matter of Altice USA, may we please have appearances of counsel?
Good morning, Your Honor. Michael Zuckerman, Office of the Attorney General, on behalf of the Board of Public Utilities.
Good morning, Your Honor. Brian Lippman, Director, Division of New Jersey, Division of Rate Counsel.
Good morning, Your Honors. Matthew Hellman on behalf of Respondent Altice. I'm here with my colleague, Howard Simons.
Welcome, counsel. Mr. Zuckerman, please go ahead.
Chief Justice, before I begin, can I just please reserve a few minutes for rebuttal?
Yes.
Thank you. May it please the court. New Jersey has long required cable companies to stop charging customers after they cancel service. Altice's main competitor, Verizon, has long followed that rule, as did Altice's predecessor, Cablevision. In 2016, Altice abruptly stopped and refused to prorate when its customers canceled their service on even the first, second, or third day of a new monthly cycle. Unsurprisingly, the board got a lot of complaints. Altice now claims that the Federal Cable Act has all along prohibited New Jersey from requiring it to respect a customer's request to cancel and to prorate accordingly. But the Cable Act's text, structure, and context, along with unanimous federal appellate decisions like Spectrum and Finneran, prove just the opposite. New Jersey's proration requirement is not preempted. I'll start with the text, where Altice runs into two main problems. First, the challenged rule does not regulate rates at all. The parties agree that a rate is a ratio of price to unit, and Altice gets to set that ratio. So if the Jones family agrees to buy cable at a ratio of $100 a month and then cancels halfway through a monthly cycle, all Altice has to do is issue a rebate based on that same ratio. Whether you call it $50 a half month or $100 a month, it's the exact same rate. The same would be true if Altice chose to sell cable at $10 a day or $10,000 a month. The rate at all times is up to Altice. Second, and independently, New Jersey doesn't regulate rates for the provision of cable service. As both the First Circuit in Spectrum and the Second Circuit in Finneran unanimously agreed, it would be strange to say that someone is being provided with cable service after she's canceled that service. Consistent with that insight, the Cable Act defines cable service as the transmission of programming to subscribers. And once someone has asked Altice to please cancel their service, you would no longer call that person Altice's subscriber. That helps explain why the mere fact that Altice would like to keep sending out a signal and charging money, whether its former customer has moved, switched to a competitor, or even died, can't be dispositive. Context and structure point in the same direction as the text. As the First Circuit detailed in Spectrum, Congress passed the Cable Act to stop state and local governments from capping monthly rates, not because it was worried about protections regarding termination or any other kind of consumer protection measure. That explains why Congress included savings clauses for both consumer protection and customer service rules, and why the legislative history for the latter makes clear that Congress was not displacing state regulation of disconnection or rebates and credits. Drawing on that history, the FCC itself confirms that before finding preemption under the Cable Act, a court should consider whether a law is more in the nature of consumer protection or more in the nature of rate regulation. And as the text, structure, and context make clear, New Jersey's proration requirement is entirely in the nature of consumer protection. Just three final points. First, none of the three opinions that Altice cites as its weight of authority helps them. Two of those opinions don't even involve the Cable Act or its unique text, structure, and context. The third is the since-vacated District of New Jersey opinion, which itself relied heavily on the since-reversed District of Maine opinion in Spectrum. That reversal by the First Circuit was unanimous, and the U.S. Supreme Court just denied certiorari. Second, while the First Circuit in Spectrum held that our reading is the best one and thus got there without even reaching the presumption against preemption, Even if this were a close call, that presumption would require this court to rule for New Jersey. After all, the board is exercising a classic form of state power, consumer protection. Finally, Congress wrote the Cable Act to foster competition. But there's nothing pro-competition about a company refusing to cancel and prorate. That's anti-competitive behavior because it punishes a customer who wants or needs to switch. This court should therefore reject Altice's preemption argument. It should also reject Altice's state law objections. And it should restore the full protections of state law to the over 700,000 New Jerseyans who buy cable service from Altice and have a right not to be charged for service they've asked Altice to please cancel. I welcome this court's questions.
Mr. Zuckerman, I have a question about the consumer protection law in Maine. We know that the Cable Act has the savings clause, and it says that nothing in the subchapter shall be construed to prohibit a state from enacting or enforcing a consumer protection law. And of course, that's the challenge regulation here. Is the consumer protection law in Maine identical to ours?
I think, Your Honor, for all functional purposes, it is identical. And I haven't heard them to suggest that there's any really distinguishing aspect of Spectrum. I think Spectrum is essentially this case.
So although it's not binding authority, you're advocating that it's persuasive in that we should adopt its reasoning.
Yes, Your Honor. We think Spectrum is highly persuasive authority. It is the exact same case. It's the only final judgment on this exact issue. It's a unanimous opinion by a federal appellate court.
In fairness to the appellate division, the case that we have is completely different than the one they had, in that the district court decision here in New Jersey was vacated, not on the merits, but vacated, and the opinion, as you correctly pointed out, relied upon by the district court judge, was reversed in the First Circuit. So in terms of the law, we're armed with more information than the appellate division had.
That's absolutely right, Your Honor. Right. Yes, at that time, the District of Maine opinion was the opinion in Spectrum, and we now know from the First Circuit unanimously that they disagree with that opinion.
And our reversed. Consumer protection law deals with billing. It's a method of billing regulation that prevents cable companies from billing for service that they never provided, correct?
I think that's well said, Your Honor. Yes, I think that as the FCC put it in a slightly different context, but still, I think very analogous context, this is just regulating the circumstances under which a cable company can charge a customer. It's not regulating rates.
So, and in fact, the regulation does not explicitly tell cable companies how much to charge for the service. It's whatever the market provides.
That's exactly right. They can charge whatever they like.
And I think you said that the whole point of the Cable Act is to promote competition.
That's right, Your Honor. And the Cable Act was as Spectrum laid this out in great depth, the Cable Act was responding to a particular evil, right? It was that state and local authorities were capping rates. That's obviously not what's happening here. They can set whatever rate they like.
If we agree with everything that you've said and adopt the reasoning of the First Circuit, what do we do with the fact that the Appellate Division never dealt with some of the other issues that were challenged by Rate Council and the BPU since the district court judge found that the Cable Act preempted the state consumer fraud, consumer protection law?
Yeah, Your Honor, I think you mean there Altice's objections to the process in the state court, the issues they didn't reach. Yeah, I mean, we think, Justice Fischelli, that you should reach those issues and resolve this case, uphold the board's order in full. We think this case has already dragged out for about 6 to 7 years. We think that's enough time for, over 700,000 New Jersey consumers. So we think their arguments on the state law objections are meritless for the reasons
you're not
detail.
In favor of a remand to the appellate division to reconsider in light of the First Circuit's decision in Spectrum and in light of the fact that the district court's decision in this case was vacated.
We would urge the court to reach the issues here since they are brief. It's been going on for 6 to 7 years. Obviously, this court can remand if it wants to. It wasn't passed on below, as Justice Fischelli noted. But we would just urge the court to reach it here. It's already fully briefed, and this is.
Can I ask you a question about the waiver argument that Altice is advancing? The 2011 bills that Verizon submitted, what did those sample bills demonstrate about how it would prorate its bills?
So, Your Honor, I think that the, one of the key things about the 2011 order, of course, it was a prerequisite at the time that if you wanted any kind of exemption, you had to submit a bill showing how you would bill in the future with the exemption you received. And so the bills, they were, I think, expressly asked to and expressly provided bills that showed preemption. Proration.
Are the bills in the record? The 2011 sample bills that were submitted?
They are in the record, I believe. They are, we cite them in our brief. I don't have the...
Perhaps you can give us the cite later.
Yes, Your Honor.
Can you point me to where in those sample bills it's indicated how Cablevision will continue to prorate? Because I do see them in the appendix, but I'm not clear on where it is in those bills that it's indicating. It's indicating how Cablevision will generally continue to bill, because 3.8 isn't just about proration, correct? But where in those bills does it show how proration will occur going forward?
Justice Pierre-Louis, my recollection is that in some of the bills where the sample customer has canceled in the middle of the cycle, obviously where the customer hasn't canceled, it doesn't show up. But I think there's at least one where the customer has canceled, and there's a line item that says something like, that shows proration occurring. And of course, one thing I can point you to now is that on, Defendant's Appendix 6 in the Aptiv, the 2006 order granting them the exemption they were asking for, which of course we maintain did not include an exemption from the proration requirement, says that their sample bills, and I'm quoting, sample bill demonstrates that Cablevision is billing in a proper manner and shows how Cablevision will prorate its bills pursuant to the requirements of Section 3.8. So it was part of the record in 2011 that the board thought they were going to continue prorating.
So that's the language that I was using in the form of the original question. I'm hoping you can show us the backup. I saw some bills in the appendix. I didn't see how, and I wondered if either party could help us on that.
Yes, Your Honor.
If BPU was not granting Verizon or Cablevision an exemption from the proration rule in Section 3.8, what specific portion was it granting Verizon and Cablevision an exemption from? Because I read 3.8 and it appears that it has four separate subsections. It has A, B, C, and D, and it's talking about billing being monthly or bi-monthly, and it's talking about proration, and it's talking about requiring payment in advance. What if they were not getting an exemption from the proration requirement? What requirement were they getting an exemption from?
Yeah, so, Your Honor, I think that, I mean, it certainly was their burden to be clear on what they would have wanted, so I can't speculate what they thought they were getting. I do think that it would make sense for the board to have believed they were getting an exemption from billing frequency requirements. That's the other, I think you just mentioned that particular requirement. So
you mean from A, where it says that the bills shall be rendered monthly, bi-monthly, quarterly, semi-annually, and annually?
That's certainly an option. That's something they could have been, they were, I guess, relieved from by that order, because it's one of the requirements in Section 3.8, and after their after they get the exemption, they're no longer subject to that, so they can render bills in more frequently, less frequently. They would no longer be subject to that requirement.
They would render bills either weekly, you're saying, or every other year? Just because A already says they can, without an exemption, be rendered monthly, bi-monthly, quarterly, semi-annually, or annually. So why would they request an exemption from that if they were already billing, for example, monthly?
I don't know exactly. I mean, I think there are other frequencies in there sort of interstitially, right? So you could imagine different subsets of weeks. You could imagine a six-week billing cycle. I don't know their business model well enough to say what would make sense for them, but I do think that it gives them that flexibility.
Were they talking about the bills having to contain basic information on prices charged, which potentially invokes C? Because that's what Rate Counsel was arguing. The argument is summarized in the 2011 relief order.
I think that's also, yeah, I think there are numerous possibilities of what they were trying to get and what they were in fact given by that order. I think the one thing that's very clear from the record is they weren't given relief from the proration requirement because the board actually wrote in its order that it expected them to keep prorating.
Why is there even a question on that sort of exchange? That's befuddling to me, frankly, about this, is that you had a request for relief from parts of seven regulations, and then you have that granted. But here we are, more than a decade later, wondering what they were allowed to do, because obviously that potentially impacts this waiver argument. Why isn't there precision in what the BPU allows a regulated entity to do when it's asked for relief from regulations?
Your Honor, I think there is, some precision here in that they write in it that they expect Altice to continue prorating. So I think that's
right. We got that. But here, the questioning kind of reveals that, at least speaking for myself, it's hard to decipher what went on there. And just it just seems like an odd sort of an administrative process where you have an application for relief from a regulation and then you have a positive response, but it's not clear what exactly the relief was being sought, and it's not clear exactly what the company is able to do. And that just seems to be kind of a quirky thing about this record that was striking to me.
Your Honor, I mean, just two points on that, I guess I would say. I mean, the first is it is their burden to come forward and say what they want with precision. This is, of course, the board's order that it's interpreting, so the board also gets deference and understanding in interpreting its own internal proceedings, its own order. But the other thing I guess I would just say is that, you know, in 2016 then, they want to buy Cablevision. There's a settlement order entered to allow them to do it. It uses very broad language suggesting or stating that they're going to have to abide by applicable customer service standards under New Jersey Administrative Code Title 14, including Chapter 18, including requirements related to billing practice and termination. Now, I understand they'll say that applicable is doing a lot of work there. I would just say, first of all, that's a very, very broad, there's a lot of weight to put on the word applicable when they're being told they have to comply with all of these different things. I actually think the order would be very weird without the word applicable because...
But just as a general matter, I assume that language that you quoted is language that appears really any time a merger is approved. So does that mean everything that's in the regulations now applies to you from BPU's perspective? Or does that mean if we gave you relief from some aspect of the regulations before, the word applicable would potentially be the word that hooks that in. You have to comply with all the regulations, but we gave you relief from five subparts of three regulations, and therefore you're okay on those. Which of the two would that mean?
I think we've read it to say that they are just required to follow all relevant customer service standards, but I think, you know, again, there is a closer question, of course, of how you read applicable in light of the oddity that there's been this exemption order granted to Cablevision's to Altice's predecessor.
In terms of the scope of the exemption order, you argued that it is Altice's burden to show that it was narrowed in some way. But the 2011, it seems like Cablevision requests the same relief that Verizon obtained. And then the BPU order granting it just grants all the relief it requested. So isn't that a very broad grant? And why would the burden be on Altice to show that it gotten a specific exemption given the broad order rather than on BPU to show, no, even though we said we were granting the relief requested, we weren't actually in this one part?
I think, Your Honor, first I would say, I think, you know, Verizon, of course, has never acted as if it has gotten this relief. It's always continued to prorate. So the record and kind of sort of practice as understood, and this gets back a little bit to Justice Patterson's question about two of what people thought they were saying when they, you know, agreed to the 2016 settlement agreement. At that point, everyone had been prorating.
That was resolved as not being part of this, and we don't need to worry about what was part of it?
I think you can certainly get there either way. I mean, I think both of the, it's belt suspenders, I think, the 2011 order doesn't grant them relief from proration, but if there was even any question about that, the 2016 order really bolts that down. And just to step back for a moment, I mean, to look back at it, if you're in the position of the parties at the time, if you're Altice and you really believe you have this exemption, but you know, you've just signed this document that says you're agreeing to abide by all applicable requirements across this huge swath of regulatory and statutory text, and you are really, this is all actually in your head. I mean, you would think that you might just go to the board and say, hey, we're considering doing this. What do you think about this? And if at that point the board says, hey, we really don't think you got this, or we're going to, you know, prevent you, we think you're not allowed to prorate, there is an easy roadmap to resolve that. You can go to court. They can go to federal court, as the cable company in Spectrum did. Simply stopping prorating, the board finding out through complaints pouring in from consumers, having this whole enforcement action, I mean, that's not consistent with an understanding that all along everyone believed that they were able to prorate it.
Counsel, you read for us language, and I just want to repeat it. Verizon's sample bill demonstrates how the company will prorate its bills pursuant to the requirements of this section, 3.8. That's the language that the BPU included in its relief order. Was that ever challenged? Did Verizon, did Cablevision, did Altice, did anybody ever come forward and challenge? Altice, of course, couldn't have at that moment in time. But did Verizon come forward afterward and say, this is wrong, our bills don't demonstrate that, we're seeking proration, we are seeking an exemption from the proration requirement?
Not to my knowledge, Your Honor.
Should we look beyond the express language that's contained in the relief order?
I don't think you need to, because I think the relief order itself speaks to what it's doing. I think that looking beyond the express language, that continuing practice and everyone accepting that you're not allowed to prorate is probative, however. So if you find the relief order at all ambiguous, I think that's confirmatory.
Why did your staff only orally notify Altice that its new policy was not consistent with the proration rule, and how does that comply with the regulation requiring the board to send written notice within 90 days of becoming aware of the violation? You just mentioned that the board was inundated with complaints, and you also mentioned that there was an enforcement action, but it seems like a very odd enforcement action, because it doesn't start in the way it's supposed to under the regulations. It doesn't end in the way it's supposed to under the regulations. What happened here?
So I think, Your Honor, and this gets to a broader point I'd like to make. I think that often we want to incentivize agencies to try to work things out with regulated entities, to not have everything go to court and become a full-blown enforcement action. And so there's informal outreach, there's, you know, verbal outreach, there's extensive negotiations. All of those things now get sort of thrown back in the board's face in this particular instance by Altice saying, well, you didn't, you know, dot your I's and cross your T's exactly the right way. You should have sent us a formal letter. You should have started proceedings. You should have just quickly entered a cease and desist order against us instead of negotiating with us. All of those things are things that I think, as a matter of policy and just good government, we like agencies to do. And so I can't speak to what exactly was going through someone's head at that exact time, but I think that is all through these proceedings is what you have as an agency that's trying to work in good faith with a regulated entity to protect New Jersey consumers, and now it's sort of held up as a problem with the process, whereas I think ultimately most regulated entities would probably prefer that the board did exactly what it did, which is reach out, try to have a conversation, try to work with them to work this out and not have it end up being 6 or 7 years of litigation.
Has the BPU, to your knowledge, ever waived the proration requirement for customers who are terminating their service?
Not to my knowledge, Your Honor.
I think we'd probably have heard about it if there were a waiver in the course of this appeal, but just... Yeah, you're not aware of it.
No, I'm not aware of any.
I assume you're saying it would not make sense because it's ultimately anti-competitive, it's anti-consumer to charge customers for days that they haven't gotten the service.
That's right, Your Honor.
Other questions, anyone? Anything you'd like to add?
No, Your Honor, I would just reiterate, as you know, Justice Fischale noted, I think the First Circuit's opinion in Spectrum is highly highly persuasive on the preemption issue. And thank you. I'll still retain some time for rebuttal. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Lipman.
Morning, Your Honors. I'd also like to reserve some time for rebuttal. I'm going to adopt most of what the Deputy Solicitor General said, and I'm going to try really hard not to repeat what he said for brevity. At its core, this is a very simple case. This is a case of customer protection provision and is not subject to preemption under the Cable Act. I represent the New Jersey Division of Rate Counsel, sometimes referred to as the Consumer Advocate, and we are the representative of ratepayers in the state of New Jersey in all cases dealing with regulated entities. And just to be clear, cable is a regulated entity. The bulk of it is no longer regulated here in New Jersey. It's regulated by the federal government. Cable is a regulated utility, and Rate Counsel is involved. We don't represent individual consumers. We represent consumers as a whole. And we're here in this case because Altice is challenging a consumer protection regulation, namely a requirement that customers do not pay for service not provided. This regulation is not rate regulation. It doesn't alter any rate that's been determined by the company for its services. The company is asserting that there's a daily rate here. There is not. It's a proration. What they're doing is they set a rate, monthly, yearly, whatever rate they set, and then if a customer stops service in the middle of a month, you figure out what that amount is. Obviously, at some point, you have to use the number of days in a month. Minutes, hours would just be ridiculous to do it that way, so days makes the most sense. The denominator is going to be 28, 29, 30, or 31, depending on the month, and you divide that into the number of days the customer actually had service, create a ratio, and multiply that by the monthly rate, and that's the amount of the refund. So it's not a daily rate. And that distinction is very important, because this is not rate regulation. This is a customer service protection. And the Act explicitly states the rights of the state to enact any consumer protection law to the extent not specifically preempted. And the state has a clear interest in protecting cable customers who are otherwise not regulated under the Federal Cable Act for this provision of not provision of service. The company will tell you it's not billing for services not received because it will continue to provide services through the end of the billing period. The problem with that argument is the customer has determined that that customer no longer wants that service. And I'd like to offer you an example of how that actually would play out using my personal father's life or this, as an example. He lived alone. He passed. I can guarantee you, upon his passing, whether Altice provided service or not, he was not using their services to watch cable. So once the person, and the same is true of someone who moves out of state or even out of the company's service territory. Once they're out of the territory, they no longer need the service. Whether Altice is providing or not, they are no longer getting service. Similarly, any argument that a customer knows what the customer was getting into when they signed up and they knew this was going to be a monthly lease or monthly rental is kind of disingenuous. I'd be willing to bet that, you know, we're all in this room very sophisticated consumers, and I'm fairly confident none of us have read the terms and agreements to the apps and other contracts that we've signed. To assume that the average customer has read that and understands it and is thinking about termination upon signing up for cable is just not a good way of looking at this. Finally, I want to talk about the weight of the argument was talked about a little bit. I'll just briefly state the appellate division relied on the district court. On the district court explicitly. The district court relied heavily upon the District of Maine court. Since then, we've had an overruling by the First Circuit, and we've also had cert denied. So the house of cards upon which the legal argument that was below the base has been swept aside, and there really is no legal argument any longer there.
You mentioned, counsel, that this is a customer service measure.
Yes,
hasn't the FCC stated that, and I'm quoting, customer service obligations are regulatory standards that govern how cable operators are available to and communicate with customers? So under that definition, how is this a customer service measure?
Because once service is terminated, service is no longer available to the customer. It's a customer service provision. You'd be asking them to pay for something that they are no longer receiving.
But it doesn't say how cable is available to. It says how cable operators are available to and communicate with customers, meaning how the operator itself is interacting with the customer if the customer has a question. That's how the FCC has defined customer service obligations, I think.
I think the state has defined customer service more broadly and has said that customer service includes when a customer, how the customer gets service, when the, or doesn't get service. There are regulations on service interruption as well, which if you read the 2011 order, one of the regulations deals with interruption as well. That order dealt with a number of regulations that the at that time Cablevision was seeking waiver for.
Is your stronger argument that it's a consumer protection law?
It is. Yes, it is. I mean, this is a consumer protection law. This is a law.
Not the customer service component of the act.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yes, this is a consumer protection law. The state obviously is very interested in consumer protection, and this is protecting consumers for services that they're not getting.
Is there any overlap between consumer protection laws and rate regulation?
I'm sorry, I don't...
Is there any overlap between consumer protection laws and rate regulation? Because it seems to me that perhaps there are some settings in which rate regulations could be consumer protection laws.
I would say if the rate was too high, it was extremely high, you could argue that would also be... If the FCC determined that some rate was ridiculously high, say the $10,000 per month, for cable provision, if the FCC said that's out of bounds, that I guess you could argue would also be consumer protection. But overall, I mean, for the most part, the FCC is leaving the consumer protection to the states to handle.
And I think the reason might be because it's a reasonable exercise of the state's police power to protect against deceptive practices by a cable company.
Correct, Your Honor. It's the state has an interest in making sure that the citizens of this state are protected and make sure that they get the service that they are asking for.
And to have a cable act preempt that consumer protection law, it has to be Congress has to set forth a clear and manifest expression if we're going to look to express preemption. Is your understanding that they are arguing that the Cable Act expressly preempts the consumer protection law?
I'll obviously let counsel speak for himself, but I think their argument is that this is rate regulation, therefore not consumer protection, and therefore falls outside of that savings clause. But if the court finds that this is a consumer protection regulation, then I believe the court must find that this is not preempted.
To your earlier answer, to the extent that there's an overlap between consumer protection and rate regulation, if the board or the BPU came forward and said the rates are too high, wouldn't that be preempted under 543A?
That would be preempted. What the board would have to do is the board would have to petition the FCC or file something at the FCC arguing that the rates are too high and get a ruling from the FCC that the rates were too high. So the board or my office, either one or both, could advocate on behalf of ratepayers in front of the FCC, which there have been provisions where we have been in front of the FCC on certain issues.
Here, the board never did that. All they said is to cable companies under this regulation is you can't charge for a service that the customer never got.
Correct, and the board was explicit that they were not setting a rate, and the board I believe the board understands that they are not allowed to set a rate. I think if they were allowed to set a rate, they would, and they haven't.
And if the board went to the FCC and said, listen, the rates are too high, under the banner of consumer protection, you have to lower them, that's a loser of an argument, isn't it?
More likely than not, yes. I mean, but for the most part, I do not think the FCC would entertain that unless it was something like the 10,000. But even then, I believe what the FCC would probably say is $10,000 is a ridiculous rate. Nobody's going to sign up for it. That's why we have competition.
Because doesn't 543A2, say that if the FCC finds that a cable system is subject to effective competition, the rates for the provision of cable service by such system shall not be subject to regulation by the FCC or by a state or franchising authority? So it makes it seem like even the FCC doesn't have the authority in that circumstance to do anything about it, as long as they found that the cable system was subject to effective competition. Perhaps they would undo that finding if rates were $10,000. Maybe they would say that is no longer effective competition. But it seems like under the statute, once the FCC finds effective competition, it's not only that the state can't regulate the rates, the FCC itself can't regulate the rates.
Right. The goal is to create a free market for cable services. And effective competition purportedly means that the customer has choices. I'll save my opinions on effective competition for another proceeding. But that the consumer has choices, that they can go to someone other than the Cablevision, that your town, you can go somewhere other than Cablevision, Optimum, or whatever, Spectrum, whichever one you have, and use one of the other services available in that town.
So then I guess what about Altice's argument that they really compete with streaming services and satellite and that streaming and satellite don't prorate?
At the end of the day, Altice is still a regulated entity, and that comes with certain duties and obligations. And the fact that they are competing with them is true, but that doesn't mean that they don't have to follow the BPU's consumer protection regulations.
Questions? Thank you, Counsel.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Mr. Hillman.
Thank you. Good morning, Your Honors. Matthew Hillman again for Respondent Altice. I'd like to start by clearing away, I think, some of the issues that go to why this is rate regulation, and then speak about what that means for the consumer protection arguments the state has offered, and then talk as well about the import of the Spectrum case and this court, the appellate division's decision in this case. Let's start with why this is rate regulation. If New Jersey passed a law requiring cable operators to offer their service at a daily rate and required that rate to be equal to the monthly rate, prorated to the monthly rate, I don't think there'd be any dispute that is rate regulation, because New Jersey would be dictating the daily rate for cable that last month of service. Now, Altice can choose the monthly rate that it wants to set. That is true. But what Altice cannot do, right? If Altice had offered its service at $3 a day or $100 a month, and someone agreed to buy a month's worth of service and then said later on, actually, I want 10 days or 5 days or 25 days, Altice could not charge that daily rate under the statute, under the regulation. It would be required to charge the bulk rate, the monthly rate, prorated. So this is rate regulation in the most fundamental sense of that term, or the most straightforward sense of that term. Do you want to know what Altice has to charge by the day? The BPU tells you it's the prorated rate, not some other rate of Altice's choosing. Now, what does that mean from the consumer protection standpoint? Federal law controls here, and federal law gives a rule of decision. It doesn't matter, Congress's judgment was, it does not matter whether or not a regulation is intended to be a consumer protection measure. What matters is it rate regulation? Because the Consumer Protection Savings Clause only goes as far as preemption allows it to. And by that I mean, if it's rate regulation, it is expressly preempted. It is prohibited and preempted. It's really a double belt and suspenders kind of thing.
And where you have rate regulation, it does not matter if the state decides that it is a consumer calls it a consumer protection measure. And I have to speak to some of the characterizations of the service in this case. I heard many times that from the other side that this is a service that Altice is not providing. That is incorrect. Here's how it works. A customer decides that they want to buy a month's worth of service, and they agree to buy a month's worth of service. At that point, Altice's obligation is to provide that month of service. And Altice does provide that month of service. It provides the full month when the customer agrees to purchase that month. The customer doesn't have to agree to purchase a month of service, but when the customer does agree to purchase that month of service, we have a deal. Altice provides it, the customer agrees to pay for it. This regulation changes that and says, actually, the month of service that the customer agreed to buy in advance, actually, they can instead choose to buy a certain number of days at a certain price. And that's why it's rate regulation. The Spectrum case, I note, pointed out that in that case, it was not clear whether or not the cable operator actually provided service for the month after the customer agreed to buy the month. Altice provides that service. You'll get service through the wall, through your you know, jack through the month. If you turn in your box, you'll get it via the internet. Altice provides the service that it does, that it agrees to. And there's a lot of talk about outage credits and things like that, or interruptions in the briefing. I think that proves our point. If there's an outage, Altice isn't providing what it said it was going to provide. Not providing what you say you're going to provide is a consumer service or a consumer protection kind of scenario. But where there's an outage, whether it's Altice's fault or not, Altice has to make the customer whole by giving that month of service that it agreed to provide. This is the converse. This, you have a consumer who has agreed to purchase a month's worth of service, and then says, actually, I'd like 5 days or 15 days or 25 days, whatever it happens to be. That is, the BPU believes that Altice ought to offer its service for those number of days at the daily prorated rate. That's a policy determination that the BPU has made, but Congress made a different and superseding policy determination, which is that where there is effective competition in the market, and with respect to my friend, it's not a question of anyone's personal views about what effective competition is. There was a finding by the FCC that has been challenged by no one, that where there's effective competition in the marketplace, it's not for the BPU or even the FCC to decide what rate, what level of daily rate, whether the daily rate should be prorated to the monthly rate. None of that is for regulators. It's for the market to decide.
So regardless of the fact that Altice continues to provide service, what is your response to Rate Counsel's argument that in these circumstances, the customer has terminated service? The customer no longer wants the service, and in many instances cannot use the service because someone might be deceased, someone may have moved out of the coverage area, so the service really isn't being used and can't be used by many of these customers. So isn't that what the customer protection piece is addressing? The fact that these customers are affirmatively stating they do not want this service any longer for whatever reason, which includes reasons that they can't use it.
Let me try to answer that in a few ways. This might be a different kind of case if the customer had not already agreed to purchase the month's worth of service.
And so someone who agrees to purchase the month's worth of service and passes away on day two of the month.
Yes, Your Honor. And Altice, as a matter of its own policy, does allow for accommodations in that kind of scenario. But as a general matter, I want to say this because I think it's important. This isn't a case about anything that's deceptive or not fully disclosed. No one is talking about the terms here and being difficult to understand. None of that is in this case. And had this not been a fully disclosed policy, I would not be here telling you it's not a consumer protection measure. That's point number one. Point number two is that I want to, again, stress when the consumer says, I want a month of service, Altice is there for the 30 days. It could be that the consumer is unable, for, as Your Honor points out, for some number of reasons, not to be able to make use of that service. But that is not atypical in the video streaming industry or in many goods and services. If you know, we talk about this in the briefs, I believe. If you go to the to a Giants football game and you leave at halftime, maybe for a really good reason, you have an emergency, whatever, you're not going to get 50% of the ticket back. And most of the time, states can regulate this kind of thing. States have a lot of power to regulate rates, but not when it comes to cable service, because cable service is something that Congress carved out as one of really a relative handful of areas where Congress made a different decision. So I take your point, Your Honor, that perhaps it is the superior policy to do it the way that you say, but that's not what Congress decided. And
so you've come forward with a thoughtful argument that this is, in effect, rate regulation because the BPU has fixed a daily rate. And your colleagues on the other side of the aisle say, not so. This is not about rate regulation. It's about termination, not rate regulation for the provision of services. If the court concludes that it's a close call, does the presumption against preemption weigh in and weigh against your argument?
No, for two reasons. One, going to the presumption, and then two, to the specific way you characterize the government's argument in this case. Let me go to the presumption first and then the termination aspect.
With the presumption, because I was suggesting a hypothetical you wouldn't like, and that is that we don't find your argument to be a slam dunk one.
Well, I appreciate that, but so I'll start with the presumption. Okay. I look to the U.S. Supreme Court for the law on presumptions against preemption.
I missed what you said.
I look to the U.S. Supreme Court to tell us what the law is on presumptions against preemption. And the case that controls here is the Puerto Rico case that we cite in our briefing. And what Justice Thomas said for the court in that case was, where there is an express preemption provision, there is no presumption. And what did he mean by that? A lot of times preemption is a matter of inference. Did Congress legislated in a certain area, did they mean to displace state law? I don't know. Perhaps they did, perhaps they didn't. Field preemption, implied preemption, those kinds of questions. But where there's express preemption, and the Cable Act is as express as they come, there is no presumption against preemption because we know Congress wanted to preempt. And at that point, the job for the court is to figure out who's got the better reading of what the statute means.
So if we're dealing with, we have express preemption, we have field preemption, we have implied preemption, a rather rare type of preemption.
Field is particularly rare, but implied is the stuff of...
Pretty rare.
Yeah, right. Pretty rare. It's not every day, but it's also not...
You're saying of the three, if there is express preemption, the presumption does not apply.
That's what the Supreme Court said, and that's why, yes.
Where in the Cable Act did Congress expressly state that the Cable Act intends to preempt consumer protection law?
What Congress said was, and I can get you the precise cites, that consumer protection laws are allowed except where there is specific preemption, something is specifically preempted. And what Congress said in section, I'll have to get you the site, is that rate regulation is expressly preempted. And if you'd like, I'll get you the site for that. If it'd be helpful, I can pull it up.
You're looking at 552D1 and 543A1.
Correct, Your Honor.
And your point is, this is rate regulation for the provision of cable services when the BPU steps in and says you have to prorate.
In terms of that argument, it seems that throughout the Cable Act, rate is used interchangeably with price or to mean price. So, for example, in 543K, it's titled Reports on Average Pricing, and then it says the FCC shall annually publish statistical reports on the average rates, thus equating price and rate. Similarly, in 532C4A, small I, the FCC may determine the maximum reasonable rate, which in that case means price. Similarly, in 551 F2A permits a court to award actual damages at the rate of $1,000 a day. So again, cost. And then also it seems through the Cable Act that rate and price are distinguished from terms and conditions. So in 541 D1, specifically talking about allowing the FCC to specify the rates, terms, and conditions for the provision of such service, listing specifically rates, terms, and conditions, such that those are not all the same thing. And then also in 532 C1, which is titled Rules on Rates, Terms, and Conditions, it provides that the cable operator shall establish the price, terms, and conditions of. So that is seeming to imply that the rate equals the price, and that is separate from a term and condition. How is this regulating the specific price and not the term and condition of service? So why is this regulation not just saying, when the customer chooses to affirmatively reject your service, you must allow them to do that? And that is a term and condition of service. That is not regulating the specific price. You can charge $1 million a month, $1,000 a month, $1 a month. That's your choice. But when the customer chooses to affirmatively reject your service, you must allow them to do so.
Two answers, Your Honor. It's not merely a term. It's the rate in the classic sense of that word. Because the rate Altice can charge for those days of service that the regulation says the customer can choose to get is dictated not by Altice, but by the BPU. It has to be a prorated rate, not, we're all familiar with when you buy in bulk, you get a lower per unit price. When you buy individually, you get a higher per unit price. If New Jersey passed a law that said supermarkets had to charge the pro rata price for a can of soda that they charge for a six pack. You want to buy one can, you have to charge 1/6 of the six pack price. That would be rate regulation. And that's what's happening here. I've just been itching to say this point, which I hope will resonate with the court. The termination context. I hear in the court's questions, this is different because the customer wants to terminate. They don't want the service anymore. Yes, maybe they agreed to buy a month's worth of service, but now they don't want it. They can't use it. Isn't that a different scenario? You know that is not how Congress thought about it, because under the rubric, under Section 543, the statute that prohibits rate regulation, Congress included a provision that says a state may not regulate termination charges, downgrade charges, where there is effective competition. So let me put that in like normal person's English. If a cable company wants to charge a customer $20 for canceling service, 543B5C says states can regulate that unless there's effective competition, the very same effective competition that we have here. So if a state can't tell a cable operator that it can't charge a bunch of money, and Altice doesn't do this, but I'm just saying that this is how Congress understood it. If a state can't tell a cable operator that how much to charge or whether it can charge a downgrade fee, that here we're talking about the actual rate for the service itself.
Let me ask you, is the regulation, the New Jersey regulation 14.18-3.8,
yes,
unique in the United States? Or do states, and whether they phrase it all the same, right, as the BPU's regulation or generally tell cable companies that they need to prorate?
It's neither unique nor ubiquitous, Your Honor. Some states do it, some states don't.
Okay. So with the exception of Spectrum and the district court here, right, Spectrum district court here, it seems that if in fact this is under federal law rate regulation, that this had to have come up in other states that similarly regulate. And yet I'm interpreting it, right, as you're relying on Spectrum, the district court. You relied successfully in the appellate division, and you relied on the district court here, which no longer exists. If this is rate regulation, where is the case law from somewhere with a similar regulation that says, as a matter of the federal court's interpretation of what this is, that this is tantamount to right regulation?
Well, I can tell you that various localities have not chosen to do this, in part because of the federal preemption law. But
some have, and I'm not asking for some states, but there are other states that are telling cable companies you've got to prorate if they terminate.
Right.
And I don't know how many there are, but let's say there are a dozen or two dozen. Well, where are the cases saying that that constitutes rate regulation?
Or doesn't. Yeah.
Well, we have Spectrum saying it doesn't.
We have the appellate division saying that
it does. It does. I get that.
So I don't have a direct answer to your question, but I have two observations, which I hope are helpful. One, this is Altice's policy. Everywhere Altice provides service, not just in New Jersey. This is the only litigated case that I'm aware of involving this.
So Altice is this is its policy recently.
In the last,
it was a national policy.
Ago, yes, yeah.
And it's doing that in states that have regulations that are analogous to 1418-3.8.
It's doing it everywhere it provides service. I'm not aware of anyone who has any complaint or other legal action taken on that. I don't know.
But I'm saying this is such you use the term ubiquitous. This is such a widespread policy, and there are states that are saying it is that have the similar regulations saying you must prorate. And I'm not asking you to say whether Altice is just going with the flow in other states or doing what it's doing. I'm not asking about Altice, but I'm suggesting that if, in fact, this is rate regulation in disguise, some court somewhere had to have the issue and hold in your direction, and it doesn't appear to have happened.
I think the inference goes the other way, Your Honor, with respect. Altice does this everywhere that it provides service. The fact that no one has either attempted to regulate a company in this way or pressed its regulation if it did, shows that federal preemption applies here. The absent, the dog that didn't bark here is the lack of enforcement of this kind of thing, given that Altice does it in half the states in the country.
Are you saying that no state that has a similar regulation has ever challenged what they are doing? I mean, if they have this regulation, these regulations exist and they are invalid because they're preempted, why are these various states regulating
You know what I think is going on, and this is just my speculation in response to Your Honor's question. The FCC has made an effective competition finding in, I believe, every state in the union, because DISH and DirecTV, among other things, are available to everyone. So the consumer has many, many choices for how to receive video service in today's world. So in a world where there's nationwide effective competition, these regulations are not valid because they do rate regulation.
In answer to Justice Patterson's question, could it be that here the BPU is not telling Altice how much to charge? They're simply saying your bills have to be prorated.
The
competitors can charge whatever they want. BPU isn't saying,
right,
putting a number on it.
Altice, you can charge $50 a month, you can charge $100 a month, you can charge $75 a month. I understand that, and that's certainly their argument. But here's what Altice can't do. Altice can't say we pick our dollar amount for the month, and that's the month, and the customer, after agreeing to that, has to buy the month. The BPU says you have to offer another option. You have to offer it on a daily basis, at least in the last month of service, and you don't get to decide what price to charge on a per day basis. That's why this is rate regulation. I absolutely concede Altice can say the bulk price, but they can't do the per day price. And that's why these supermarket examples have appeared in the briefing. If I were the New Jersey Department of Grocery Regulation and I said, You can charge whatever you want for a six-pack, but just so you know, those cans in the front of the store that are the singletons, you got to charge 1/6 for those. That would be rate regulation, and that's what this is.
Could Altice theoretically go to the board and say, this is how we want a bill going forward. We're going to have a monthly rate, and for the last month, a monthly rate of $30 a month, and for the last month, if you terminate midstream, we're going to charge $1.25 a day.
Not if this is a valid regulation, because what this regulation says is that in the last month, you have to prorate. It doesn't give, there's no discretion, there's no, so the answer is no. Altice could offer a daily rate for customers to choose ex ante. I want to buy my cable service on a $2 a day thing, I suppose, if Altice wanted to. The regulation doesn't forbid that. But where somebody buys the month program, presumably, to get the lower per unit price, the regulation requires. There's no...
I gather no one's gone to the BPU and sought relief in that fashion because you're charging the full month.
You mean no cable operators gone to the... Yeah. It would fall on deaf ears because the regulation says what to do in that final month. It doesn't say charge a daily rate. It says charge a prorated rate. And so there's a lot of sense in what you're saying as a matter of policy, but that isn't what the regulation permits. And that's really why we're here today.
So I was going to ask whether there was any reference to termination fees or termination rebates in the specific text of the Cable Act or the legislative history of the act. But then I thought I just heard you say a few minutes ago before Justice Patterson's question that there actually is, and that the Cable Act expressly preempts termination fees in Section 543B5C. So I brought up what I think is Section 543B5C, but I just don't see anything. I don't see the word termination. I don't see anything that I can tell to be even the tiniest bit relevant. Can you tell me what language specifically? I can read it, but I'm not sure that anyone wants to hear me do that. Can you tell me what language specifically in 543B5C says that states cannot charge termination fees?
Or did you perhaps mean a different site? I had the same difficulty.
I think it's a different site.
I'm sorry, did I give the wrong site, Your Honor? What I'm talking about is the provision that talks about, it's actually an affirmative grant of authority that then gets taken away where there's effective competition. It says unreasonable fees, states can regulate the reasonableness of fees for downgrade charges and reduction of service.
Can you tell us again what you believe the correct site is?
I thought it was 543B5C, but I'm looking here to see if I can confirm.
So I'll start to read it and you'll tell me if this is what you're referring to. It says standards, it basically says that the FCC can regulate, and then it says standards and procedures to prevent unreasonable charges for changes in the subscriber's selection of services or equipment.
Yes.
Subjected to regulation under this section, which standards shall require that charges for changing the service tier selected shall be based on the cost of such change and shall not exceed nominal amounts. So that's what you're referring to?
Correct. And the reason not the clearest of statutory language, but there's history to it. The Finneran decision, which the parties have briefed back and forth in the case, was about, I'm going to use the plain English, downgrade charges. You have service, you're paying for service, and you say, I want less service, or I want no service. The cable company in the Finneran case charged a fee for that, the fee to move from having service to having less service or no service. That's why I call it a downgrade charge or a termination charge.
Well, is there a difference between wanting no service and wanting to terminate? You said less service. Yeah, I get less service, simple
right,
plan.
No, these kinds of downgrade charges, it's an umbrella term for going from to less or to none.
So is it include termination?
Yes, Your Honor.
Can you tell us the specific language in the statute that you're relying on?
I wish I had quoted it in our brief, that way I could read it. But it is really what Your Honor just read.
I can read it again, but I just don't see anything that talks about termination. Are you hanging your hat on where it says the subscriber's selection of services or equipment?
Yes.
So you're saying that when it says that the FCC, so this is, it seems like it's granting affirmative authority to the FCC.
Correct.
To issue certain regulations.
Correct.
And then it says that one of those regulations that the FCC can issue is one about of the subscriber's selection of services or equipment. Standards and procedures to prevent unreasonable charges. Or changes in the subscriber selection of services or equipment.
Correct.
So you're saying that when someone cancels their subscription, that is the same as them changing their selection of services or equipment?
Yes, it is, Your Honor. It's like I no longer need my cable box. I don't have cable, or I don't. It could be as simple as I don't want HBO anymore. I'm losing my premium package. But it's
isn't termination a term of art in this industry? I mean, isn't termination? Tell me if I'm wrong. I no longer want Cablevision. I want Spectrum, or vice versa. Or I may not want cable anymore because I don't have time to watch TV. I am ending my service with this particular entity. Isn't that what termination means?
I don't think it's a term of art that only works one way. And again, this provision didn't arise in a vacuum. If I could, just it may speak to Your Honor's question. The provision was enacted by Congress to this Section 543, no rate regulation, bevy of regulations, or bevy of provisions, after the Finneran decision. The Finneran decision said this kind of downgrade charge isn't doesn't fall within the umbrella of rate regulation because it's not actually for the provision of service. It's actually to get less service. That was the logic of that opinion. Congress said, no, you don't understand what we want to do here. Even a charge to reduce or eliminate service cannot be regulated by a state under this rubric of rate regulation. And here we're not talking about a separate charge to get rid of service. We're not saying, and again, Altice doesn't do this, but a cable company says, I understand you don't want service anymore. That'll be $25 or $100, I don't know. The Congress made the judgment that although there can be regulation of those things absent effective competition, where there is effective competition, and it's Section 543A2 that takes it away where there is effective competition, you can't do it.
So your read of this is that changing the service tier encompasses termination?
Yes, and also the equipment, which I think shows that you're giving back your box. And
understood.
Yeah.
We're about at the half-hour mark. I wanted to move on to waiver, unless you had a question on this.
I just wanted to, that's what I was going to move on to.
We have, let's go there. We have this finding that we focused on earlier in the argument by the BPU in the 2011 relief order that it gave to Verizon, that the sample bill demonstrates how the company will prorate its bills pursuant to the requirements of the section. Are the bills in the record before us, and what do they demonstrate about how proration will be done?
I will answer your question. I will say one thing at the outset, which is no court has passed on these questions, and we do think the proper course is that this is not a court of first view. It's a court of review, and to the extent that we're talking about the state law issues in the case, it really should be the appellate division that can work this out in the first instance. Now, that said, we briefed it because the other side briefed it in the case. Let me try to answer your question. The bills that Cablevision submitted show both full monthly charges and prorated charges. Cablevision asked for a waiver from the section 1418.3-8 in order to have flexibility going forward. The only substantive prohibition in that section is the prohibition against or requiring proration. It's just revisionist history to say that when the board granted an unconditional waiver from that section, full stop, it wasn't granting that waiver.
There's numerous parts of 3.8, and even in the BPU's relief order granting relief, the BPU notes one of the issues that Rate Council had with regard to certain language being in the bill, which is a portion of 3.8. So there are other portions in that section that this particular relief request could have been related to. And when you have the BPU stating the language that's already been noted, that the bills demonstrate that the company is billing in a proper manner and shows how Cablevision will prorate its bills pursuant to the requirements of this section. Is that an indicator that that is not what Cablevision was seeking, but seeking relief from other portions of 3.8?
Well, a couple of answers to that, Your Honor. No one has ever been able to successfully, in my view, identify what it is that we were seeking relief from, if not the proration requirement. We asked for flexibility going forward. We asked for relief from this provision among many others. And it was granted without any, even if the BPU talked about certain aspects of the regulation, they didn't say other aspects of the regulation were preserved. What they said was that a waiver was granted for the whole thing.
Are the bills in the record?
Yes, they are, Your Honor.
Do you have citations to which bills are the prorated bills that indicate how proration was being handled by Cablevision?
It's DA 116 to 127, Your Honor.
But not all of those are proration bills.
No, those are both prorated and non-prorated examples.
Can you tell us? So why would you have submitted bills, or really your predecessor, Cablevision, have submitted bills showing, quote, how they will prorate pursuant to the requirements of Section 3.8 if your whole point of seeking relief was to no longer need to prorate pursuant to 3.8?
Again, I think you have to look at the entirety of what we said in response to the board's request for information. We were asking for a waiver from this provision and other provisions, and we said the purpose of the of getting the waiver from this provision was to prorate, was to have flexibility going forward.
Flexibility in proration?
Flexibility from that section, which only requires proration.
Because Verizon was given flexibility. I mean, that it seems as though that was the goal of the petition, to be on the same playing field as Verizon at the time.
Well, I mean, I'm sure we and of course many of our competitors don't prorate. What we wanted was flexibility going forward. It wasn't even necessarily clear what the future would bring, but we wanted the flexibility. We asked for the waiver and we got the waiver.
Did Verizon or Cablevision expressly ask the BPU to grant relief from the proration requirement? And can you tell us where we can find that in the record?
We asked for, what I can tell you is, we asked for relief from 1418.38, yes.
3.8 encompasses a number of points. So my question is, did you expressly ask to be relieved of the obligation to prorate your bills?
We did not use those words. But what I would say, we ask for flexibility and relief from that section, which, if nothing else, includes the requirement to prorate. If we ask for an unconditional, uncaveated relief from a section, that's what we asked for.
Cable company submits bills to BPU, aren't they, in essence, saying, this is how it's going to work, agency, and this is how we are going, we're not sending you sample bills to show how we have historically have done things. We are showing you how we intend to interact with the customers with respect to billing.
We said exactly the opposite, Your Honor. What we said was, and this is at DA 6 and DA 57.
I'm sorry, what was the citation?
DA 6 and DA 57. If you look in those places, you will see that these bills showed our current billing practices, and we were prorating at that time. But the purpose of the waiver is to provide flexibility to change should Cablevision wish to modify that in the future. So the hypo, or the scenario you described, Your Honor, of we represented this is how we were going to do it going forward, that's exactly what we didn't say. We said the opposite. We weren't even silent on that.
And you said.
It does.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I think the order does say that you submitted bills showing, and I quote, how you will prorate pursuant to the requirements of Section 3.8. going forward, and that was the 2011 order. So if you disagreed with that language in the order and you did not believe, or Cablevision did not believe, that they were showing bills about how they would prorate in the future, and instead they were just showing that they had been prorating in the past, but in the future they're not going to prorate anymore because that's the whole reason that they asked for the exemption, why didn't they object to the 2011 order at the time?
A couple of reasons. It would have been strange to object to an order that says waived. I mean, that's what the order says. It also notes that we asked for the waiver for flexibility. So as we understood, those bills, to the extent Cablevision was going to prorate, those bills show how you prorate.
Isn't that a red flag, though? You get an order from an agency saying, here's what we think this is. We think this is a representation as to how you're going to go forward. And the regulated entity is looking at that, and that's not what it meant. Isn't that got trouble written all over it?
The answer is no, for a couple of reasons. If there were other clear requirements that are waivable and not merely discretionary in 14.18.3.8, I suppose that could make some sense. But that's not what 14.3.8 says. 14.3.8 is a proration requirement, and that's what we got a waiver from. The board noted our request for flexibility. I'm not sure what the board, you asked what did Cablevision think was happening? I asked, what did the board think was happening? They granted a waiver from a proration requirement.
No, I understand, but it also is a obviously, as subsequent events have proven, there is a real, if what your client's predecessors intent in submitting those bills was nothing more to tell the BPU, this is something we've done in the past, but we may very well change it. And they get back from the agency, and generally there's a lot of attention to every word said by the agency, a statement that its understanding is this is how going forward customers are going to be treated for purposes of this. That's a pretty big disconnect, is it not?
No, Your Honor, just because of the particular, I understand your point about the importance of details and language, but here you have a proration provision, that's what it is, and a waiver from the proration provision.
So here's the waiver, if I could, because the BPU explains some of its language. I'm looking at page 7 of the Cablevision relief order. The board has reviewed the sample bills submitted by Cablevision, the ones that on the page earlier it says show how Cablevision will prorate its bills. And the board is satisfied that Cablevision is billing its customers adequately and in a manner that provides its customers sufficient information. From that language, how are we to conclude that BPU expressly waived the proration requirement?
Because context matters, both the context of the end, where there's an unconditional waiver, and the context that comes before, where Cablevision is asking for relief to do things differently in the future. And that is exactly what we said we would do with the bills that we gave the BPU in this matter.
But that's not part of their finding. I'm reading their finding to you, not your argument.
Well, but what that finding says is that it shows that we prorate in a adequate way, right? To paraphrase it, that's true. We do prorate in an adequate way, but it doesn't say that we're prohibited from prorating or from not prorating in the future. Instead, based on our and the board also notes our request for flexibility, we're talking about a null set if our request for flexibility really means just continue to do exactly what the regulation would otherwise require without a waiver.
Is it really a null set? I know that I asked the government what specifically were they waiving compliance with in 3.8, if not the proration requirement. But in fairness, 3.8 does have four sections.
Yes.
And they do refer to things other than proration regarding termination. So there's something about seasonal service and how you can bill seasonal service in accordance with reasonable terms. So maybe that's someone who only wants cable every summer or something like that. There's also a provision about the proration of initial bills. There's a separate provision that is talking about a discontinuance or interruption of service.
Right.
So it's not only about the requirement to prorate at termination.
The regulation does talk about other things. You're correct about that. But I think if you look, you'll see all of them are permissive. You used a can when you were describing what you can do.
Okay.
You don't need a waiver for things that you can or presumably don't need to do. It's the proration requirement that is the thou shall or thou must. That is the only thou must in that regulation.
But also the requirement that bills be rendered monthly, either monthly, bi-monthly, quarterly, semi-annually, annually.
Well,
right.
Yes, Your Honor, but no one has ever
said a cable company can decide that they want to charge daily. And that would be.
Yes, but no one ever suggested that we were looking to be able to charge daily or in 7-week intervals or anything like that.
But it's again, you're arguing that that Cablevision was granted relief for this entire section. So that's seemingly part of the flexibility that Cablevision was seeking to be able to do exactly what they wanted with regard to billing. That was not permitted by this particular section.
Two points on that, Your Honor. One, we gave when we submitted bills, we gave prorated bills and full monthly bills. We never gave a 9-day bill or a 7-week bill or anything like that. That's just not what was at issue there. And the submitted
because
bills.
Because you weren't, because Cablevision wasn't billing daily. Of course,
but we
couldn't.
It's true. We weren't billing daily. The second thing, if I could, there was a lot of talk because the court had questions about this merger order.
May I ask one more question? Just follow
please.
Up. Were there any bills submitted in which services had been terminated, but there was no proration?
And the answer to that is no, because the request was to show our sample bills, meaning or to provide bills to show how we prorated, which we did. We didn't have bills at that time that do what the process is today, because that wasn't allowed. We were seeking a waiver to do that.
And you're not arguing that the BPU gave an implied waiver of the proration requirement. You're arguing that it's an express waiver in the order.
As express as the bold letters in that order make it out. May I just have
what
a word?
I missed what you said.
Bold letter.
It's bold letter.
When it says bolded, express. This is waived. It is express. Talking about implication, to pick up on your question, there's a lot about what did the merger order do? What did that somehow bring it all back? That isn't correct. It says applicable. We talked about that. And the waiver Cablevision got was for a bunch of different provisions. The BPU is not here arguing that those other waivers were impliedly taken away. The merger found Cablevision as Cablevision was, subject to certain things, not subject to other things. So, and then I just want to skip forward because I know my time is short. I heard the question was, why did the BPU do things orally rather than by the regulations? And I think I heard my friends on the other side say, that's a good governance kind of principle. That is not a good governance kind of principle. To seek to impose significant liability and take away a waiver that was granted by delay and then an informal phone call, that's not right. That's not good governance. That is the opposite of that.
Just to be clear, if we agree with them that the Cable Act does not preempt 3.8. You want us to remand to the Appellate Division to deal with all of these issues?
I do, because that is the court's standard practice, and I think this court normally doesn't pass on administrative questions in the first instance. Whether or not it should go back, but since the court had questions and it was briefed, I felt like I wanted to give the court be as responsive as I could. But let me close by saying this, just going back to question one, as it were, the federal law preemption question, because I do want to say the Appellate Division got it correct. The Appellate Division looked to the District Court of New Jersey decision. That decision was not vacated because it was wrong. It was vacated because the Third Circuit thought that the state courts ought to decide this question. The Appellate Division made its independent assessment about what federal law requires. And I submit to you, that is how the Supreme Court of the United States would understand what the Cable Act means. We're talking about text, we're talking about structure, and we're talking about respecting Congress's policy decision to say that where there is rate regulation, and this does dictate the daily rate that Altice would have to charge, it's not for the BPU or even the FCC to decide, but for the market.
The Appellate Division also relied on that main district court case that our district court judge relied on. So you're saying that the First Circuit was wrong.
I am, and I ask you, look at the First Circuit decision, and the key, that decision makes two moves. And I submit that neither of them applies here or is correct. One is to suggest that the cable service wasn't being provided for the full month in that case. Altice provides its service for the full month. It's a deal. You agree to buy, we will provide, we do provide. Secondly, there is the crux of that decision is an extended discussion of the Cable Act's legislative history, in which the court concludes proration requirements were not mentioned in the legislative history. That is true. Proration requirements are not mentioned in the legislative history, but clear text control, clear broad express text controls over legislative history. Congress doesn't have to predict every kind of rate regulation to say you can't rate regulate. So with respect to the First Circuit's reasoning, I submit that the Appellate Division is the one that got it right in this case. The New Jersey courts have consistently gotten this right.
Thank you, Mr. Helm.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Mr. Zuckerman, you're welcome.
Just 5 points in rebuttal. I will try to keep them brief. Mr. Chief Justice, the first one, I want to start with your question about where in the record it actually shows that they're prorating on their bills. It's DA 122 and DA 124. If you look down about two-thirds of the way down the page, it says partial month. Those are the prorated monthly bills. Other bills are full months, so there's no proration, obviously, because they're full month bills.
And if I may, before you get to move on to point two, what's your response to Altice's argument that they made clear that this is just past history and we want to depart from that potentially?
And we wanted flexibility.
I think that argument is first of all, to hang this all on the word flexibility is, I think, just completely atextual. When the board asked them for sample bills that showed proration, they provided proration. The plain text of the regulations they were subject to said, as a condition of receiving exemption, you have to show what your bills are going to look like. As Justice Wehner Apter pointed out, the board used the future tense. It wrote right in its order in 2011, we expect you to keep doing this. They never objected to that. They never said in all the years since, until this enforcement action starts, they never said, we have a problem with this, or we really thought we were getting the right to change this. I also just want to point out, again, as the court, I think, appreciates from the questions, there are other provisions in 3.8. The board wouldn't have looked at this and said, wow, the only thing here is the proration requirement. Justice Pierre-Louis, I think you pointed out the requirements of some receiving advance payments up front. That's in 3.8C itself. Justice Wehner, after you pointed out 3.A, the periodicity, how often you send bills. Again, the board's not required to peer inside their minds and wonder what they want to do as a matter of their business model. It's on them to say, we want relief from proration. And as you heard from my friend on the other side, they never said expressly, we want relief from proration. They said the word flexibility, and now they're here, more than a decade later, saying that flexibility has told everyone all along that it meant this. I just don't think that holds water. Again, they did want to match Verizon. To Justice Pierre-Louis' question, Verizon has been prorating ever since, never stopped. I also just want to say one point about the 2016 order. I think it does a little bit more than my friend on the other side gave it credit for. At the end of that language that they sign and accept, it says requirements related to billing practices and termination. So, just because we're not saying that the 2016 order sweeps away everything. Billing practices and termination sounds a lot like proration. And so there is more even in the 2016 order to put them on notice.
Can you give us the context of that phrase? What's the rest of the sentence?
The sentence says, and I'm going to eliminate a lot of includings and things that aren't, but abide by applicable customer service standards under New Jersey Administrative Code Title 14, including Chapters 3, 10, and 18, and NJSA 48.5A, including requirements related to billing practices and termination. I've omitted some words there just to make it a wieldy sentence, but that's the huge swath of things they're agreeing to, and one of those things is billing practices and termination requirements, which you'd think if they were expecting, they saw any ambiguity at all here, they have, as you saw from Mr. Howell, they have very, very talented lawyers. They might, someone might have raised a hand and said, I don't know about this sentence, this sounds problematic for us. So that's my, that's just my first point. On the 543B5C point, appreciated Justice Wehner Apter's colloquy with my friend on the other side. I think it is, Justice Wehner Apter, I think you're absolutely right. It's important to peel back the onion on what they're actually saying that provision does. The history of that section, or what is relevant here, my friend on the other side is right that there's this case Finneran from the Second Circuit, a unanimous case about downgrade charges. We'd urge you, the court, to read that case. We think it's a very good case for us for a number of reasons, including the meaning of the words for the provision of cable service. What that case was about is New York having a state consumer protection law protecting people against downgrade charges, which I think the case says could be as high as $60 or $100. They're very high. And after Finneran comes out, Congress passes 543B5C, which tells the FCC to look into the problem. So that's just a recognition that this practice that New York was protecting people from is a problematic practice that the FCC should be looking into for everyone in the country, not just New Yorkers. And if you look at the FCC's opinion in its 1994 cable order, I think it's the third reconsideration. We cited extensively in our brief. They talk about the idea of concurrent jurisdiction to deal with consumer protection issues. That one's about negative option billing, but I don't see how you can read B5C, 543B5C, to be anything other than concurrent jurisdiction to deal with the consumer protection problem of downgrade charges, much like negative option billing. The last thing I'll just say...
Just to make sure I'm understanding, so you're saying that even 543B5C, understanding it was not to overrule Finneran, and it was not to say that a state cannot prohibit downgrade charges.
That's absolutely right, Your Honor. And I think the other way you know that is if you look through 543 itself, there's lots in 543 that is clearly not preempted because it's clearly not rate regulation. There are notice requirements, there are minimum content requirements, there are all sorts of things that we know are not rate regulation in 543, including negative option billing, which the FCC itself says is concurrent jurisdiction in the 1994 cable order. So I just don't think that argument, once you peel back the onion on it, you know, holds up at all. Third, on the presumption against preemption, we don't think you need to reach it. The First Circuit did not reach it in Spectrum. But just to my friend's point about Puerto Rico, first of all, that case involved a territory and not a state. It involved a core federal issue of bankruptcy, not a state issue like consumer protection. It involved text that the court said was absolutely plain, so there was an express provision, to Justice Fischelli's point, that went directly to the question here. As my colleague on the other side, I think, conceded, there's no such express preemption here that talks about proration. And last but not least, as they admit in their brief, the Third Circuit still applies the presumption against preemption after Puerto Rico to these types of matters for substantially the same reason that I've just given. So I don't think that Puerto Rico, if you think this is at all a close case, I don't think the Puerto Rico case displaces the presumption against preemption in this kind of a case
at all. When you say this kind of a case, what kind of a case are you talking about?
A case involving state regulation of consumer protection, where we have a state sovereign, New Jersey, regulating in an area of core traditional state power like consumer protection.
In which the argument is express preemption?
In which the argument is certainly not where there's an express preemption argument. Here there is no express preemption of proration, as I think I heard the other side concede. There's a broad preemption.
The argument is express preemption, not conflict or field preemption, right?
That's right, yes. The fourth point I wanted to make just quickly on Justice Wehner Apter's colloquy with my friend on the other side about streaming services and Netflix, I just would note, you know, that their Altice streaming services, for purposes of the governing law, they're their competitors are other cable companies. They are a regulated entity by the Board of Public Utilities. The Board of Public Utilities does not have authority. They have access to public rights of way. They can sell all sorts of profitable services over their public infrastructure. They have protection against competition. People can't just enter the market and get a franchise. And of course, the board's not saying that it thinks that that billing practice by some other streaming company is a good one or a bad one. They just don't have jurisdiction over it. I just want to say a broader point about the rate regulation question and the idea of, you know, is this regulating a rate? It's not regulating a rate. I thought Justice Wiener Apter's questions to my friend about the sort of units of sale versus price are important and illustrative here. This is ultimately requiring Altice to respect a customer's request to cancel service when they ask. That's why I think 552D1 about consumer protection and 552D2 about customer service requirements, the Chief Justice's question, are relevant. We know from the legislative history that Congress was saying that 552D2 about customer service was not displacing state regulation of rebates and credits and disconnection, and this is around disconnection. I think I would submit it's not good customer service when the customer calls and says it's the third day of the month, I'd like to cancel, and you say, well, okay, I'll cancel 27 or 28 days later for you. So there are lots of consumer protection measures like this that regulate particular units of sale. I hear them with they make the point about, you know, gallons of milk versus half gallons of milk. I think we all remember when Mayor Bloomberg wanted to restrict the size of soda that could be sold in New York by restaurants. I don't think anybody was saying that Mayor Bloomberg was trying to regulate rates for the provision of soda. We have other examples of this in New Jersey law. Landlords are required to prorate leases when victims of domestic violence have to leave their homes because their safety is at risk. I don't think anyone would say that's regulating the rates for the provision of housing. I think we know what regulating rates for the provision of housing is. It's rent control. Just the same way, this is my final point, just the same way Congress knew what it was doing when it passed the Cable Act. It was regulating rates. It was displacing state regulation of rates for the provision of cable service, which is caps on prices. That was the evil that it was addressing. I agree with my friend on the other side. We too would urge you to read Spectrum. It lays out that history and context very clearly. That history and context is important. And for all of those reasons, we would ask this court to reverse the decision below and to uphold the board's order in full. Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Lipman, did you want to offer a rebuttal?
Very quickly, Your Honor, because Deputy Solicitor General hit on most of my points, so I'm not going to repeat them. There's no point to that. I just want to emphasize, this is not a daily rate. This is a percentage. If this was a daily rate, first of all, it would be a different rate every month that the board would be imposing, and everyone would do their best to make sure they either died or fixed termination in a month that had 31 days, and certainly never in February, because the daily rate would change every time. Rather, what we're looking at is a percentage of time that service is not being provided and making sure that the customer is not charged for that amount. The only way to do that calculation, and I know most of us went to law school to avoid math, but you know, unfortunately, rate regulation has required me now to do a lot more math than I ever thought I would. There's no way to do that calculation without figuring out how many days are in a month.
We got it.
Okay. The other thing I want to talk about is the waiver very quickly. The waiver order in 2011 starts out by pointing out that Cablevision came in to get what Verizon had. That's what they wanted. They were very explicit when they said Cablevision will continue to prorate, and then the other portion that you read on page 7 of the order, Your Honor. And importantly, it then says, therefore, the board finds. So it's adopting the paragraph before it when it grants, and it doesn't say waiver here, it says, this rule relief provision is hereby granted. It granted the provision based on the paragraph before that clearly allowed it for proration. But then you can go to the 2019 cease and desist order as well, And there, if there's any doubt what the board meant, the board said what it meant. And as someone who has been on the wrong side of the interpretations of what the board meant by the board many times, I have to live with the board said what it meant in 2019. And what it meant was proration was going to be part of that waiver. And they were going to continue prorate just like Verizon did, because they got exactly what Verizon got when they came in. So there was no waiver of the proration provision at that time in 2011. And the board made that explicit in 2019 when they explained what they meant in 2011.
Thank you, Mr. Levin. Thank you to all counsel. Very fine.